You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This was on Twitter?
It was on Twitter,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Patrick.
Sometimes I pop in, like, so see you what's going
on. Dip back into the poison well.
I just walk back like a dog to his vomit. I have returned. No, it's like walk back in, peep in what's going on.
What's her?
Oh, they're fighting again?
Everything's the same? Okay. All right.
Everything's the same? Everything good. Changes. Nothing stays the same.
I feel like getting back on Twitter is that scene where Captain Jack Sparrow goes to Tortuga and he immediately gets slapped by two women. That's what it would be like if I went back on Catholic
Twitter. That's not even, sorry, I'm looking around my apartment for the lie. I can't find the lie.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast that doesn't care that King Henry VIII was athletic in his younger years. It's your boy, Ethan.
And I'm Patrick.
I was just reading Hilaire Belloc's biography of King Henry VIII, and he talked about how he was athletic in his younger years, and I don't buy it. I don't care.
You don't buy it?
No. Apparently, he was a good writer.
Whatever that means.
I know.
I was into a History of England podcast for a while. Yes. Because of my Belloc kick. I wanted to get deep into like that era of English history, and it was interesting because it was a very pro English perspective, and by pro English I mean it was very pro Anglican. Like the guy, he was like, well, now I'm an atheist, but I have a fond recollection. I have a fond memory of the Anglican Church, and he was very pro-Anglican in the way that he analyzed history, to the point of like disparaging Thomas More and like praising Cromwell or whatever his name was.
There was Cromwell, and then there was Cranmer, and then there was Cromwell again.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep them all straight.
But he was like, oh yeah, you know, Thomas Becket wasn't that great. Thomas More wasn't that great. John, what's his name? Fisher wasn't that great. And I'm like, these guys are literally canonized saints. What have you done with your life?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It was really goofy. But one thing that he did mention, he was like, you know, Henry gets a lot of flack, but he was very athletic in his younger years.
Is that true? Is that really what he said?
He did talk about it. He spent a lot of time talking about, he's like, we think of King Henry VIII as this old fat guy, but he was very attractive.
Very
and
attractive.
He's like, that's why all these women wanted to marry him. And I'm like, well, I don't know if you have to explain why women wanted to marry the king of England.
Yeah.
I don't think you had to explain that.
He was a sickly man. That's the thing, is that he was very athletic. He was also super smart, which is, a lot of people forget that he really loved the Eucharist. Which is a huge bummer for everything else that happened.
Huge bummer.
But he did love the Eucharist. So
isn't that just a great warning to all of us that no matter how much you love the Eucharist, you could behead your second wife.
You could, yes, and your third, and your fourth.
Nah, I'm pretty sure the fourth one. Nah, yeah, she died too. And
the fifth.
Oof.
No, not and, not eighth. And the fifth. And the fifth.
And the fifth. Henry VIII, eighth wife? I don't know. That's
pretty good. what's going on? Welcome to
with me.
Welcome to Monday afternoon at 2:25 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's your boy Ethan.
It's crazy. It's crazy to think that we were here 5 days ago recording the pod
late at night. Usually, I'm still recovering from that podcasting session.
Me too, because I was unable to recover from the podcast. Like after we hung up, like I said, I was unable to recover from the podcast. Not just the podcast, but also after we hung up on the podcast, I like worked until 2 a.m.
Why would you do that?
Because I had a meeting the next day and I didn't want to wake up in the morning early and do the work. I was like, I want to get the rough draft done, wake up in the morning and then finish the rough draft.
I'm going to send you the book afterwards. Boundaries, and I'm going to make you give me a book report on it.
Sorry, my email just went off. I forgot to turn off my email.
Turn off your email. Stop getting distracted.
Stupid email. The sound went off and I wanted to make sure Ding. That it was silent. So if we had to use the OBS, you could cut it. Anyway, this was not a work thing. This was a side hustle thing. So it's supposed to be done not during work hours. But anyway, I got a lot done, and actually it was cool because I was in a very creative space after we recorded the podcast, and I presented the script to the guy, my client, and hot diggity dang, he loved it. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no spoilies, but It's gonna be good. But anyway, so I stayed up till 2, and then I woke up the next morning and I slept like until 11, obviously, because that's what happens when you stay up till 2. And then the following night, I was so tired, I went to bed. I woke up fine, but the night after that, so 2 nights ago,
okay,
all right, I could not fall asleep until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow,
I could not do it.
Couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
He was trying.
It sucked. I was like squeezing my eyes real tight. Nothing.
Was your wife in bed with you?
No.
Oh, she's gone.
She's on a vacation. She's on a trip to go visit her sister. She was supposed to come back now. I was supposed to pick her up from the airport and then go to record the podcast. I was supposed to do. I was supposed to go from work to the airport to the home to the podcast.
That's good.
But she just couldn't get on one from where her sister lives to Chicago, which is the hub. So she's flying standby, which is life when you fly standby. But so I don't get to see my wife until 8:50 or midnight tonight.
Boo.
Sucks. I know. Huge bummer.
Well, I'm sorry that you didn't you were unable to fall asleep all alone in your bed.
And then I had life night the next night.
Oh yeah?
So I was like, it was like a busy day. I had to go to work.
Mm.
I barely made it to mass. I woke up at 11:45 and I was like, mass is at 12:30. It's the last mass I can go to.
Oh, Patrick.
But I made it.
Yeah, you got to make sure you make mass a priority.
It was indeed a priority.
That's what they say.
My alarm went off, but my body did not go off. You know what I mean? Like my body was like, we're still asleep, man.
Mm-hmm. The alarm's beeping, but I'm asleeping.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
No, but I do have a firm recollection of I went to bed at 4, but I woke up at 6, as if my body was waking me up for the day.
Yes.
And I was like, no. And I still had trouble falling asleep. And I was like, go, dude, sleep. Go back to bed. And I did. But then I woke up at 11.
Okay. So it all worked out in the end.
Yeah.
That's good.
It may have been trying to sleep as hard as I did. Probably made it harder for me.
Yeah. What were you doing all day that made you not able to? Did you drink coffee at 10 p.m.?
I don't know.
What were you doing?
Did you expose yourself to
an exceeding amount of blue light before going to bed?
That might have been it.
Yeah, that could be.
Maybe. I was working all day.
You forgot to drink your sleepy time tea.
I forgot to drink my lavender chamomile tea, which, thanks to the now Emma Stevie, I'm super into lavender chamomile tea.
Did you have tea when you were here? Is that?
I did. She said, I went off to the airport, and I was like, I want some tea. And I was like, but I don't have time to drink it. And she was like, here's a to-go cup. She gave me a to-go cup. And I drove her car to the airport to pick up my wife. And I was drinking this lavender chamomile tea. And I was like, man, this stuff is awesome. This is so good. And so I made PB get it. And I drink it sometimes when I'm just like chilling.
That's great. You know. Emma's spreading the tea gospel.
It's great. I'm probably going to have some tonight while I wait for my wife to fly in from Chi-Town.
When people come to the Stevie household, two things happen. They get rid of their TVs and they start drinking some tea, please.
Tea, please.
That's great. I'm glad you're doing better now.
You should know these three things of the Stevies. Mm-hmm. No TVs. Yes, tea, please. All right. So this week I want to talk about COVID policies and the way we talk about them.
All right, Patrick. So let me just make sure you're speaking clearly. We're going to talk about the coronavirus.
We are indeed going to talk about the coronavirus. So this podcast can't be monetized on YouTube.
Only if only if we have disinformation on this podcast.
Only if we have disinformation. No, there was a while where you couldn't even you couldn't even say coronavirus
COVID-19
on a YouTube video.
Wow.
Yeah, it was at the beginning when like Plandemic came out and like people were like, "Whoa, why did the?" Anyway, we're not gonna get into that.
Dang it.
Okay, so before we do that though, we need to recognize this is all scripted. So I got to.
Okay, Patrick, he's reading straight from a page.
I gotta get in. This is a new thing we're trying.
Patrick told me that I can interrupt him at every time at any point, and I'm going to abuse that privilege.
Actually, there are paragraphs, so never mind. You can't.
You wrote so much.
Yeah, but it's fine.
This
it's
is supposed to be dynamic. We're supposed to just be back and forth. All right.
But there's I'm actually reading there's an article that I wrote, and so I wanted to pull like examples. I don't just want to be like, oh, I underlined this and I gotta find it, you know, like we usually do.
You're making fun of me. I don't like
it. I am
it.
Making fun of us. Making fun of us. Okay.
It's our charm. All right.
This week I wanted to talk about COVID policies and the way we talk about them. But before we do that, we need to recognize how needlessly partisan these discussions have become. Somehow the liberal position leans towards the over-cautious side and the conservative position leans towards less caution. And it's sad because this discourse consists in two sides yelling at each other instead of finding the Aristotelian mean, so to speak, between these two extremes. And I have to admit that over the course of the pandemic, I myself have waffled between these two extremes, joining in the fun of laughing at both the overly restrictive COVID policies or at unhinged anti-masker protesters. But in practice, I realized I tend to follow the COVID precautions that best fit my personal taste at the moment, which I understand is quite literally the opposite of virtue. What I hope to do in this episode is not label our podcast or ourselves in either camp. What I want to do is bring to this conversation a concept that is foreign to American conversations and frankly quite terrifying to most people, and that is the concept of nuance. So are you down? Are you down to talk about this?
I have no choice.
You have no choice. You
we're
can,
already
you
you've already read the first third of your script, so we can't go back.
Yeah, we can't. So I'd like to start out with the observation that there is a difference between wisdom and expertise. And this observation comes from an article that I read in, yes, again, New Polity magazine. I'm going to keep going to that well
sucking
until it
that
runs
teat dry.
An expert is defined as expertise is defined as perfection of a human capacity for knowing or doing something that is, and this is the most important part, it is not immediately directed towards the human end. So you can't have like expertise in fortitude, but you can have expertise in theology or biology. Mm. These things are not immediately directed towards the human end. Knowing about, it's not immediately directed, so it can help you. Like knowing about what the Trinity is can help you towards the human end of human flourishing, but it's not absolutely necessary for the human end. So Slyf, the author of the article, thinks, and I agree, that in our current day, we prefer experts more than wise men and women. And this is largely due to the fact that I don't think we have a shared vision of what wisdom actually is. So the important thing we need to keep in mind during the rest of this podcast is like the distinction between expertise and virtue and how our society prefers expertise more so than virtue. And I think if you've been paying attention to the news at all, you can see where I'm going with this.
Yes.
It's like the title of the article was Trust the Experts, which is something that I've heard over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have as well. And there was something that didn't sit right with me, you know, when it came to trust the experts, but I didn't exactly know what it was until I read this article. So what happens in a society that worships experts more than the truly virtuous? Well, without virtuous men and women to guide it in what is truly just, morality becomes simply moralism, which is a stance of moral language. Moralism is an instance where moral language is used to encourage acts that have a semblance of morality, but in reality are empty. So today we he gave a pretty good example of a couple of instances of moralism. Like a moralism would be we must save lives at all costs. Like one life lost is too many, which is a moralism. It's actually not true that one life lost is too many. Life lost is bad. But that implies
people die
that
every day for lots of reasons.
Exactly. And he mentioned the scroll of, and I think we talked about this we talked about this last week about how people were putting the death toll of COVID next to the death toll of Pearl Harbor and 9/11, which were preventable tragedies orchestrated by human beings, whereas this is a disease that you couldn't stop from happening. You know, you couldn't stop from happening. You can make arguments that, like, well, if we had done this X, Y, or Z, we could have had fewer deaths. But again, it's like the first person to get COVID who died, that was inevitable. That was going to happen. And so it's like these moralisms, they don't actually mean anything.
Correct.
They're just pious sounding things.
Yes. Yes.
And so he says that these days we quite often illegitimately deploy moral language as a way to pass off something other than genuine human greatness as the end to which all our actions must be subordinate. So what that means is, like, sometimes we say things to make another end besides human greatness the rule. So, like, how do we organize our lives? We organize it around what is truly good and just, or do we organize it around, you know, one life lost is too many. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, for example, he said, this is a quote from his article, quote, "A glaring, if minor, example is the 1,288, quote, public health professionals and community stakeholders that signed an open letter stating, despite the Black Lives Matter protests were risky for COVID-19 transmission, they were too, quote, vital to the national public health, end quote, to condemn. Even at a time when, across the country, businesses and even churches were being shuttered. The letter outright says that, quote, public health best practices, end quote, should be observed during protests, quote, to the extent possible, end quote. And I don't think this is a condemnation of those protests themselves, but it shows what moralism ends up being. It allows you to hold two contradictory ideas at once, namely that it's essential to break public health measures occasionally, and also public health measures should be universally followed at all times. The letter even said, quote, this should not be confused with a permissive stance on all public gatherings, particularly protests against stay-at-home orders, end quote, since those protests explicitly, quote, oppose public health intervention. So this was the contradiction that we saw conservatives upset about in June of last year during the Black Lives Matter protests, where you know, you'd see memes of, like, coronavirus trying to decide if I'm protesting against racism or COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, like, coronavirus will only hurt me if I'm protesting COVID.
Right.
It's moralism is allows for those two contradictory things to happen at once, and it'll defer to whatever the quote unquote experts get to decide what those moralisms are. I shouldn't say quote unquote experts, because they are experts. But that's the thing, is, like, they're making this rule, right, that, oh, it's okay for these protests to happen, but it's not okay for these other protests to happen, because those guys are crazy. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like those people are out of line. And again, it's like, if someone wants to protest, I don't think that my business should close. They have the right to do that. You know, like, they should do that if they so choose. But, you know, obviously it's like a protest where people are getting together and saying, oh, this pandemic was planned by Bill Gates to shoot us up. That's obviously stupid. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that wasn't what those protests were.
Sure.
But, like, the moralistic idea would have us believe that. And I'm not saying that any of these protests are wrong. I'm not saying that any of these positions are wrong. Because even Slife says that moralism doesn't need to be wrong in order to be moralism. It can it can lead you to a good end. Like, hey, I would actually argue that we should have had those protests happen, even with the risk involved.
Okay. Yeah.
I think those protests were good. I think protesting the death of an unarmed Black man at the hands of an armed police officer who was kneeling on his neck, I think those protests are a good thing.
Yes.
I think we should protest wrongful death like that. And I would even say it was good to do it despite the danger that it posed to the people that were protesting. But, like, at the same time, that shows that, like, that shows a need for wisdom, right? Like, you need wisdom to be able to decide, prudence to be able to decide, when is it right to circumvent public health measures, public health recommendations, and when is it wrong? What this reveals is that moralism is not a consistent way to develop values in a society, as they're often contradictory. Consider how one person can believe we must protect the most vulnerable in regards to abortion, but that, quote, national sovereignty is a basic right, end quote, in regards to refugees. Moralisms don't serve to make you a better person. They serve to bolster specific agendas. And I'd like to add, like, I'd like to know your thoughts on moralism in general, Ethan, and if you see it anywhere else.
Man, this is so hard for me because I don't pay attention to anything. and so the ones that you've highlighted are probably the ones that I'm the most familiar with, because the abortion one is one that I care about, you know, and believe that vulnerable lives are ought to be protected. But I also recognize that it, when it's actually implemented, has some problems. But I can't really think of any other ones that are like super out there.
I think moralism's reveal themselves in certain cliches that we say all the time.
Yeah.
In that article, the customer's
always right is a good one.
The customer's always right is a really good moralism. Because the funny thing is that
no business owner actually believes that.
Yeah.
It's only people who are firmly believe that they are on the correct side of some kind of confusion at the customer service desk in Target or whatever.
Precisely. And it's customer's always right. That's actually a really good one, because what is it there to do? It's not there to order you towards virtue. It's there to order you towards a certain kind of behavior.
Yes.
That achieves an end.
Yes.
So moralisms are not, moralisms see human action as a means towards an end instead of a good in and of themselves. Like it sees morality as a means to an end. So the customer's always right. What does it serve to do? Why do people say that?
It makes it so that they can get whatever it is, the thing that they want, right? Better service, whatever product they're trying
pizza,
to...
Better pizza, Papa John's. It says...
That's a moralism. Better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's.
It's there for two people. One, so that, you know, the customer keeps coming back. It's also there so that the employee gets his toes in line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, when I tell a customer at Bob Evans to say please when they ask me for a spoon... everyone thinks it's hilarious, because obviously no one thinks that customer is always right. But that moralism is what makes that woman feel like she's entitled to a free meal that she's not entitled to simply because she perceived a slight on behalf of the person giving her the meal. Yeah. Even if I had said, you know, I don't like you and I think that your glasses look weird, that doesn't entitle you to a free meal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like these moralisms are purely for some kind of material gain in some way. This journal installment or whatever from New Polity republished a French writer at the turn of the 20th century, his exegesis of commonplaces, and that word in French means like essentially cliches. So it was like an exegesis of cliche, and so certain cliches like I am what I am, or follow your arrow, or live your truth, like certain things like that. What those cliches were back in the day, is that those are moralisms as well, of like, oh, live your truth, or those moralism stuff that we say all the time without thinking about it, cliches, they don't actually communicate truth. That's what a moralism is. It's something that doesn't communicate truth. It communicates a modified behavior, which, okay, moving on to my script's not over.
Okay,
it is close to over. Moralism is not a purely progressive vice. I want to underscore that. And I think cancel culture is an example of this. The moralism of cancel culture is that we have to deplatform people when they do bad things. That's a moralism, right? Like, what do people say when someone does... You're problematic, you know, like someone's problematic, so they deserve to be deplatformed. But the conservative reaction against cancel culture is also, it's also a moralism that cancel culture is always bad, or that like, oh, we have cancel culture nowadays, is like this idea that, you know, people don't deserve certain consequences for their actions. Like, oh, this comedian who was kind of like sexually pressuring his fans, he doesn't deserve to be deplatformed because it's cancel culture. It's like, no, he actually probably does deserve to be deplatformed because he has this influence that he has abused.
Yeah.
That influence should be taken away. Right. You know?
Yeah.
Like this woman who tweets racist things and uses her platform to belittle people should have that taken away. You know, it's like that's the thing, is like that's leading from wisdom. But these two maxims of like, oh, we need to deplatform everyone who ever does something that I don't like. You know, that's like the reaction against that is that, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I kind of disagree with you because
like, that's a first.
I know. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's the... like... are we talking about, like, they should have their platform digitally taken away? Because I think if we just, like, treat the digital medium as an extension of a person's thoughts and ideas, to begin saying that someone ought to have their freedom of expression taken away because they're doing something that's perceived to be wrong is like, I don't know, a little sketchy to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is the issue. Sorry. I should have spoken in particulars because gotcha. One of the problems with moralism is it takes true things and makes them absolute.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, some people do deserve to not have influence anymore. Like, I would argue, and I think justly, we can speak of particular cases. I don't think Harvey Weinstein should be in Hollywood.
Correct.
I don't think that he deserves to have that kind of power and influence. Let's speak of, like, another specific case that I just know a little bit more about.
Mm-hmm.
The specific case of John Crist, a Christian comedian.
This is the one that it's interesting to me. It's like, is it right to... okay, we expose him, right? Let's just put all the truth, all the cards out on the table, make sure everybody knows about it. And then if he still wants to do comedy and people still want to pay to listen to him, is like, is that, who are we to determine that then, you know, at a certain point of cancellation levels, you are no longer allowed to exist in public life if you haven't done anything illegal? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I think that's the interesting question. It is an interesting question, but it's funny because both ways of determining, right? Like, so the Twitter in general deciding this person should be quote unquote canceled,
yeah,
and his fan base decided it's still a tyranny of the majority. It's still a tyranny of democracy. It's just like people.
Well, it's not a tyranny of democracy because for John Christ's fans, if they all realize, oh, dude, this guy was pressuring girls to do sexual favors for him so he would give them tickets, if they all agree that, like, yeah, that's pretty egregious and we're not going to pay for his stuff anymore, and then he keeps trying to do comedy, then he's not going to make any money. But the difference is on Twitter, a whole bunch of people who have never heard of and don't care about John Crist can decide that for his fans, right?
I see what you're saying.
I'm not defending his actions, right? But I'm saying that and a lot of times that decision is not just made by people who hear about it. It's made by the people who control the platform itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is like a question, right? And I think that's something, like, connecting it back to the original premise, is something that's happened with the coronavirus thing too, is that it's like, instead of people just deciding for themselves, oh, this guy's kind of off base, I'm gonna, you know, stop supporting him, because of this influx of the people who control the platform trying to, like, get rid of it creates this, like, negative energy.
You know? And I think that underscores the point that I was making earlier, which is like the people who make policy surrounding coronavirus are experts. They're not necessarily wise.
Yeah.
The people who run digital media platforms are tech experts. They're not necessarily wise.
Yes.
The people who are deciding that John Crist is canceled, the people at Netflix who canceled his special are not necessarily wise. They're just tech experts, and they're media experts, and they understand that people won't watch. They're PR experts. They understand that people won't like Netflix anymore if they support John Crist.
Right.
And so it's like these things are happening not because someone is saying. And I'm of the opinion that if a person abuses their influence, they should no longer have that influence. But that's the thing, is I don't think that we can trust John Crist's fans or Twitter to make that decision.
Right. So everything gets arbitrated by the pontiff, you know, because that's the only I don't know what the solution you're proposing is, because if everyone has the opinion that you have, then people who will be unjustly have their influence taken away. Right.
Certainly.
So it can't be up to the individual.
The solution, that's not really a solution, because it's such a high, lofty realization. I think at a certain point
we need to have a tribunal in front of the Roman pontiff where we take people who have said problematic things on Twitter and let Pope Francis decide. That's what we need to do.
It's funny because the solution is that everybody needs to be more virtuous.
Yes.
But the problem is we don't have structures in place within liberalism, which by that I mean classical liberalism that has existed since the 1800s, not left-leaning politics.
I think we've made that clear enough on this podcast.
Some people start listening.
That's true. Nobody starts listening to this podcast. We only have existing listeners. We don't have any new listeners.
By liberalism, like, so within liberalism, I don't think there's a structure. Because we all have competing ideas of the good. We all have competing conceptions of the good. And the liberal falsity of neutrality, like the liberal idea of neutrality, doesn't exist. Where, we're neutral. We're not going to say that's good, that's bad. We're just going to let the market decide what good is. And what inevitably happens is everyone's vote for what is, quote unquote, the good is considered equal. And so... That's exactly the thing, is like John Crist's fans, right, who may or may not be wise and just themselves, they may act out of their own self-interest. The people on Twitter are acting out of their own self-interest. John Crist is acting out of his own self-interest. The people who are canceling his special on Netflix are acting out of their own self-interest. Everyone's acting out of their own self-interest. So no one is considering what actually is the best thing for all the parties involved. You know,
I feel like it's a toss up between like two bad solutions. The first bad solution is we let the market decide. The second bad solution is we allow whoever controls the means of whatever this influence is to decide. And both of which we've seen are not working. Right. Like, again, I want to pull it back to the coronavirus thing, which is, I thought, what we were talking about. We're talking about John Crist. And so I'm confused.
Yeah. Yeah. But, sorry. The reason we got on this tangent was because I talked about cancel culture as a moralism.
I see.
But this will translate. I promise. I can pull it back to coronavirus.
I believe you can. The thing with the coronavirus is like there clearly is a market for people who desire information about the coronavirus that is not coming from the CDC. Like, there very clearly is like a group of people that is not an insignificant group of people that have decided that the information that is being told to them through quote unquote official channels is not, they have canceled that information.
It is not trustworthy. Yeah.
They have canceled it and they have decided to replace it with non-problematic information.
Sure.
That they're getting from other sources. Now, to probably a majority of people, that looks backwards, right? That doesn't make any sense. Like, you should cancel the thing that's very clearly out of the mainstream and get everybody back in the mainstream. But that's effectively the same logic and same, I would say, process that's used to get rid of everything, right? Is we've taken this information, we've decided it's problematic, we're going to protest it, we're going to cancel it, and we're going to get our news from a different place and or get our content or whatever from a different place. And so it to me, it's like, and then the response comes in from these official channels and shutting down YouTube accounts and shutting down Twitter accounts and just it's, I mean, you're chopping off a hydra at this point, and it's just going to keep growing. There's no way for the official body to handle it because the other side of the coin is working in the opposite direction. And I just don't think we should be surprised that this is what's happening.
These kinds of accounts drive up engagement. So they secretly don't want,
So I don't think we should, like, a lot of people are just shocked. I can't understand how people would be listening to XYZ pundit talk about XYZ theory about the lab leak or about the vaccine or about whatever, when in reality, it's like they're just following the formula that they've seen over and over again when people decide that they want to not listen to someone and had deemed them problematic and then go and listen to someone else. That's the habit that we've created.
Yeah.
And so it's not shocking to me, but
I think the solution to this global phenomenon is profoundly personal.
Okay.
I texted you a picture of the documentary about Fauci.
Yes,
on Disney Plus.
Yes, you did.
I thought that was hilarious. So funny that a bureaucrat from the NIH or wherever he's from, got a documentary made about him because he happened to be the guy in the chair when the pandemic hit. You know what I mean? Like, the only reason why anyone would care about a documentary is because we were all about Dr. Fauci is because we were glued to our television sets for about a month and a half at the beginning of the pandemic. And he was talking every single week. And we were like, this guy is so smart, you know? There's nothing immediately apparent about his life that's incredibly interesting. I don't know him. Maybe he came from like an interesting background and they want to tell a story about how he got to be just a mid-level bureaucrat in a health agency. But the joke that I made was like, could you imagine if there was a famine, would like the guy from the Department of Agriculture get a documentary made about him?
Anyway. Maybe. Depends.
Maybe. Right. The fact that he got a documentary made about him shows you that anybody can randomly have a ton of influence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he went to Cornell. He was a privileged guy, smart dude, you know, but like Muriel went to Cornell, you know, she's a friend of mine. You know what I mean? Like, Why don't we have a Muriel documentary? That would be interesting. You know, it's like anybody can become randomly influential. You never know how much influence you're going to have. And so, like, the reality is we all need to become more virtuous. We really need to just read the Bible, read Proverbs, read wisdom, understand where wisdom comes from, that it begins with the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, which means you need to grow in wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, and fear of the Lord. That's what you need to do. That's what you need to do.
Yes.
Because any one of us could become the quote-unquote expert that people are looking to.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be the guy at Facebook who makes a decision whether or not this post or this account stays up. And you should be able to use what... And you're not going to make perfect decisions. Like... The problem with expertise is that it gives the idea that the policies and the strategies that we have for these things are set in stone and perfect. Like, because this person knows exactly how COVID works, he also must know how, or because he knows how diseases work, he also must know how to prevent a global pandemic. The number of which we've experienced in our lifetimes amounts to exactly one. He must know exactly what to do. I want to read a very specific policy section from this article that I didn't copy and paste into my script, but I think it bears repeating here because it was a good illustration of how ridiculous the policies can be without just the basic, like, I don't want to do this, so I'm not going to wear a mask. You know, I bristle at the idea that having kids wear masks at school is child abuse. I think that's a little goofy.
Sending your kids to public school is child abuse.
But he made a good point, right? So he uses this one example. In mid-20, this is all a quote, so just assume that I'm quoting until I say that I'm not quoting anymore.
Sounds good.
In mid-2020, the state of Ohio mandated that large outdoor events like festivals should be conducted according to this rule, quote, individuals must avoid gathering in groups and attempt at all times to maintain social distancing. When gathered together, individuals should be in a group of no more than 10 individuals that is separated from other groups by at least 6 feet, end quote. Notice, first of all, that the rule supposes you will disobey it. You must avoid gathering, but also when you are gathered. Notice that it also supposes that society is made up of individuals instead of families, and certainly not of families with more than 10 people. Notice also the number 10 has been plucked out of the air. Notice that by the time the edict was issued, the general risklessness of outdoor events was well known. And take a moment to try and imagine the movements of these groups. If any part of each group must stay 6 feet from any part of another group when the groups mill about during a festival, each member would have to maintain an impressive awareness to avoid encroachment from passersby. How could one even tell from a distance whether one was looking at two groups of five or one group of 10 that was just a little far apart in the middle? The determination would be of great importance to one's own maneuvers. One could rhapsodize on the idiocy of this passage for days. Is it necessary to ask, had the person who wrote this ever met a human being? One indeed is tempted to wonder whether they are human beings. Those who wrote, approved, and promulgated such nonsensical drivel, etc., etc.
We all have to walk around like the delightful children from down the lane.
Exactly.
As
it's
a
like
unit.
This policy, I've written COVID policies. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've had to, because everyone expects them.
Sure.
And the reality is, right, it's like, The COVID policy in the Diocese of Pittsburgh for faith formation now, because the governor of PA mandated it for all schools, not public schools, all schools, which is interesting. Fun that he can do that. It's interesting. And this is actually right after an amendment to the Constitution was passed was not passed. People voted on it, but it wasn't passed. That would limit his powers in state of emergency. Mm-hmm. So if they had voted that in, he wouldn't be able to do this, which is interesting. But anyway, so we formed a policy, the Diocese of Pittsburgh formed a policy in accordance with this rule, that you have to wear a mask except when engaged in physical activity, either indoors or outdoors.
Okay.
And so I was like, what constitutes
as long as
physical
activity? You are extant, you don't have to wear a mask.
Like, what is it? What constitutes physical activity? Like, if it's a physical game, right? Like, so if it's a physical game that involves physical exertion, I think that's the wording, physical exertion. So is that like, if I have a game where kids are building a time machine out of cardboard boxes, but they have to run and get supplies, are they able to take their mask off while they're running, but have to put it back on at the table? You know, that's like, it's the problem with
if it's hard for me to stand up because my legs are a little tired.
Do I have to keep my mask on?
Yeah.
And it's just, and it's funny because, you know, especially when you work with middle schoolers, a parent was emailing me and she was like, I'm worried. I don't want to send my kid to faith formation because, are you requiring masks because we have someone who is at risk at home? Like, if they get COVID, it's really bad. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you should not send your kid to faith formation. We are requiring masks. You should not send your kid to faith formation because you walk in and every kid looks like this. And you know what I look like. If every kid, their nose is above the mask, or let's be honest, their entire face is above the mask, just around their chin. You know what I mean?
Has anybody ever successfully band-aided something for seventh graders?
No, they do not care. They're like, I'm going to live forever. I've been living this long, probably going to keep doing it. You know, they don't have any concept.
I can play Fortnite if I get COVID.
Exactly, right? Like, they're just like, what a sick day means. What does a sick day mean? It means I get to sit on my beanbag chair and eat chips while I play Fortnite or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's the reality, right? It's like the law has to take into consideration the de facto reality of human beings and legislate accordingly. But it's very clear that like these things are very arbitrary, like the 10 individuals thing. Why 10?
10 fingers.
Is it exactly? It's a round number. You know, it's the same reason why we have the metric system. It's based on 10. It's easy for us to remember, you know. The 6 feet thing makes more sense because that's like,
it's like a scientifically measured thing.
Exactly.
The number
10
is
just
a 10. They picked it.
Yeah. And so it's like, and that was a big joke when at the beginning of this, when gatherings were restricted to 10. I remember Teresa's birthday party we had. It had just been restricted to 10. And we were like, crap, we have 11. But then we thought about it and we were like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
You know, like, what is the difference? Like, I remember at our wedding, we were like, they were like, it has to be 50. And they were like, well, why? He was like, well, we can. He was like, it has to be 50, but I'm willing to do like 75. And I was like, then why have the rule of 50 if it could be 75? There's no reason, is there? You know? And so it's like, that's the point, is like, it's.
And that's what a lot of people who don't understand why everyone's all upset about the restrictions is because, talking about the experts, there are people who have just blindly, unprudentially followed the quote-unquote wisdom of the experts their entire lives, right? And so what is being told to them is it would be as if God himself had come down and said 10 people, right?
10 people.
That's because that's the way that they've thought this whole time. Anything that comes through these particular information pipelines, right? Mm-hmm. These are the things that I know are always 100% true and I can trust them. That is for a variety of reasons, but that's the case. And so when they see people not obeying it, it would be as if, you know, like what we see when we see people who are just acting not in accord with human nature. It's like, why are you doing? Obviously, this is bad for you, right? You're getting drunk every weekend and you're hooking up with people and you're sad. Like, can you not put the dots together? I can put the dots together, but you can't. Like, that's the same response that they have. It's like, how can you not see this thing that's so clear to everyone else?
And I would say the converse is also true, where the other side has this moralism of, I put this down. I think we should think independently. Okay, so I do want to add this one thing in real quick. Pray, pay, and obey is like a Catholic version of moralism. There is a Catholic version of moralism that just focuses on, reduces virtue to a set of external actions. That was something that I wanted to bring up after the cancel culture thing. But the biggest problem is that he mentions this quote, which I think we should keep in mind forever.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, public opinion is not the sum of private opinions anymore. On the contrary, private opinions are just an echo of public opinion. I think we need to think independently of public opinion, and that is not in the right-wing, quote, don't trust the mainstream media way, which is also a kind of moralism. Don't trust the mainstream media. Don't blindly follow orders, right? Like, those are also kinds of moralism. Sometimes you should just follow the rules. Like, if you see all these videos of people who refuse to wear masks in grocery stores and get arrested because they're making a scene, it's like, it would be better for you to just put on the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of like, well, I don't want to just blindly follow. Yeah, that's true. But it's like, the difference is just put on the thing and mm-hmm. it's not going to hurt you. But you know, it's like, it's, I will wear a mask because it's like, why not? You know?
Yeah.
There's really no, I don't want to. And like when I'm at youth ministry, it's like very uncomfortable and I take my mask off so I can talk. But again, it's like, that's the thing, that the, when you can take your mask off versus putting it back on, like on airplanes, you have to like take your mask off, take a bite, put the mask back on. You know, it's like, it's really funny because you could imagine like, what if I don't? Is the flight attendant going to be like, oh, you held it down a little too long,
mm-hmm.
sir? I'm going to have to ask you to step off the plane.
When it was in restaurants and everything, yeah. You know, it's like COVID when you're on your way to your table, and then like COVID when you're at your table. You know? Yeah, it's like all of a sudden,
man, I can't get you.
I can't get him because he's sitting down. Like that, it's the addition of all of those things
mm-hmm.
that I think have led people to just say things like don't trust the mainstream media, and have, and now with these the kooky stuff about the vaccine and the, I mean, everyone's social, like, I can't believe there's so much vaccine hesitancy, like we just need to educate. It's like, no, these people have been quote unquote educated by these outlets for months and months and months and months and months, and over and over and over again, like probably 7 times out of 10, the thing that they've been educated on has either been walked back or proven to be nonsense.
Like, I remember when people at the beginning of the pandemic were saying masks don't do anything.
Yeah.
Does anyone else remember that? I feel like I'm going crazy. And the reason they were saying that was because they didn't want hospitals to run out of masks.
Yes.
And so they were like, don't get masks. It's not going to help that much.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, masks are essential. Now, I do understand there is a difference because people were like, masks aren't going to protect you, but they will protect other people from you. And there's like droplet spread versus aerosol spread. Anyway, it's... But that's the thing, is like there's so much, because the expertise keeps changing,
mm-hmm.
because we're developing knowledge about this thing. We're so used to in our day and age having all of the answers readily available to us,
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden when we don't, we're like, oh no, what's gonna happen? That like
some people act that way.
People aren't able to distinguish between emergency use authorization versus like an unapproved vaccine. Right, like people are they hear emergency use authorization and they hear this must not be safe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Well, I don't think that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're far enough past the 75% mark of inoculation where we can pretty much safely say that there's no at least short term adverse effects.
Right.
To the vaccine.
That is the key too. That's the other thing. It's like there are some people who might be legitimately afraid of long term adverse effects.
Yeah.
In the same way that there's long-term adverse effects from the coronavirus, people are worried that there might be long-term adverse effects from vaccines because it's not an uncommon thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
I also don't trust most experts because a lot of people are saying we need to open up the economy right now. We gotta open up right now. We gotta do it. We gotta open up right now because we gotta save the economy. You know, I don't necessarily trust that people in power will make decisions that aren't based on the financial gain of their own.
So what I'm trying to say is that there are a lot of people that have been, it feels like they've been handicapped.
Sure.
By the, maybe not handicapped. What's the word? Kneecapped?
Mm-hmm.
Kneecapped. But they're trying to figure out, sure, like, what's the right thing to do? Because going back to your moralisms thing, right? The super pro-vax, cautious folk that we all know, that are the people that are in charge of all of the media. They say moralisms like one life lost is too many, right?
Yes.
And yeah. So in some people's minds, they see things and they see doctors and people saying, you know, online, hey, we're treating people with ivermectin, not horse paste, the actual ivermectin.
Yes.
Right. We're treating people with this and it's helping. It's got this, like, you know, 98% efficacy with the number of patients that we've treated. And then they're seeing these people saying Jimmy Kimmel comes on and says, rest in peace, Wheezy, when he's talking about someone, you know, dying because they ate horse paste.
Oh, gosh.
Like, yeah, that's what he said. And like, people are just completely making fun of people who are ingesting this goo, which obviously people who are just eating the goo is that's not right.
It is, in their defense, it is apple flavored.
Yes. But it, so for the people who are legitimately trying to,
I love the way apples taste, not the way they crunch.
Apples are delicious.
Like, they're amazing.
I love the crunch. People who are legitimately trying to figure out a way to protect themselves and their family members because they're, for whatever reason, it doesn't even really matter the reason that they don't want the vaccine, are being completely blasted by everyone for even just asking like legitimate questions. Because early in the pandemic, that's the other thing, is there are those videos of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris talking about, you know, if Trump's vaccine gets approved, I'm going to be hesitant to take it, all these things. And then it switches. And so it's like,
I literally wrote an article for New Polity that they didn't respond to me about that predicted this exact thing.
Right. And it
I was
just
like,
seems,
I feel like I'm in, this book gets quoted too much, but a very specific part of 1984 where they're like, mm-hmm, switching who they're at war with.
Yeah. Yes.
Things switch all the time.
Yes.
Things like, oh, now, closing the borders, apparently, back in the day, in the 1990s, closing the borders used to be a very liberal position. The left was like, no, we got to close the borders. But the right was like, no. Everyone in the world should be able to go wherever they want, mm-hmm, because they're all free people. You know, that was the idea. Was like,
because the more immigrants we have coming here, the more we can exploit their labor.
No. The point was not this. That might have been the ulterior motive. I'm not sure. But the point was a very libertarian position of,
sure,
national borders are fake. We should be very open and everyone should be able to go wherever they want. And the liberal position was no. Close borders, national sovereignty, nationalism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then it flipped where the left is like, no, globalism is great. Their borders don't really matter. And the conservative position is, no, we got to lock up those borders real tight, baby. And it's because moralisms allow you to hold contradictory opinions. So a contradictory opinion, one side of that opinion is going to come out and the other one is going to go away. And I think this is a little bit of a tu quoque fallacy, mm-hmm, but I would like to have a serious discussion of, like, I don't subscribe to the, you have a moral obligation to receive the vaccine. I don't subscribe to that. Mostly because if I did, I would be in trouble. It's a bit of a tu quoque fallacy because if you are legally, or not legally, if you are morally obligated to get vaccines, I have sinned 24 times because I've never gotten a flu shot. You know what I mean?
Like, we're about to get a lot of angry emails from people.
Every year I forget to get a flu shot and I'm like, oh crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get it sometimes on the years where I can get up enough courage. I'm just scared of needles, man.
Yeah, like needles. I really don't like needles.
Really hate them.
Yeah.
And so I know I need to get over it. And sometimes I get the flu shot, but to be honest, I don't always get the flu shot.
I always get the flu shot. Know? But that's the thing is like if you are saying now that it's you're morally obligated to get the vaccine, I would like to know, because people do die from the flu. Are you also logically, consistently, you would be morally obligated to get the vaccine, the flu vaccine, unless you want to say you're more obligated now because more people would die, in which case I would call you a utilitarian, because you're not more morally obligated to do something because it'll prevent more loss of life. I don't know. It's an interesting question, and I think we need to have I think we need to shift our understanding of this away from the public opinion of it. I think we need to recognize that our private opinions are formed by the public opinion, not the other mm-hmm. way around, and we mm-hmm. shouldn't let moralism define our conversations. Nuance, baby. It's hard to come by these days.
I just hate that the feeling that anytime I was in a business setting recently.
Is that so?
And I was with a group of people, and one of the people in that group, there were six of us total standing there, or five of us total standing there, just at one point stopped the conversation and looked around and said, "Hey, we're all vaccinated here, right?" And then proceeded to go on for probably 5 to 10 minutes about how ridiculous it is that people aren't getting the vaccine. But the undertone throughout the whole thing was, "I can't believe all those stupid poor people aren't getting the vaccine."
Whoa, what?
Well, but they never said that explicitly, right?
Yeah.
No one's ever saying that, but that is the tone that is coming across in a lot of places right now.
It's really funny how like both liberals and conservatives do that with like mm-hmm. their ideological enemies. Like the high-minded liberal paints the conservative as just a gun-toting country boy, and the conservatives paint the liberals as these like broke college students just want a handout. It seems like we just really hate the poor. I think that's what it is. We just really don't like the poor.
Some might say we need a preferential option for the poor.
I would agree with whoever said that.
Yes.
I think whoever said that should also be the one true Church of Christ.
I think whoever said that is legitimately the Pope. That's the other thing too is not that I mind getting lumped in with stupid poor people, because I generally fit into that category. I feel like there's no way for any kind of rational discussion about the things that we've talked about here today and other things too, because it's immediately, you know, are you completely on board with everyone being forced to get vaccinated or not? And as soon as you bring up the idea of like, well, actually, if we made rapid testing available in every single American household at the same low cost that we made vaccines available for everybody in America, that might provide a really reasonable and safe alternative for people who, for whatever reason, don't want to get the vaccine. So maybe instead of continuing to push this narrative and deepening the divide, we could provide an alternative, because we had enough money in the government somewhere to create this brand new vaccine out of thin air.
And very obviously, we can just make money.
Very obviously, we can. It doesn't, like, the government is not restrained when it comes to authorizing things in emergency situations for mass production, right?
And like according to like these articles that I read when we were talking about the debt thing,
mm-hmm.
Very obviously, apparently, we don't have to pay any of this money back. So like, let's keep printing it, baby.
Exactly. So it's like
drill, so to speak.
Drill, baby, drill. But now you look at, you know, how much a rapid, accurate at home test costs. It's like $25 from CVS, and they're all sold out, and you can't get one anywhere. Yeah. And so, you just have to ask the question.
Well, no, Ethan, very clearly they're only making a dollar profit, and those tests cost $24.
They actually cost $24. I don't want to bring this all back to, like, I don't want to bring this back to the whole big pharma controls everything, but there are multi-billion dollar companies lobbying for particular policies behind the scenes. And it just so happens that those particular policies fall in line with everyone has to get vaccinated, right? And they do not fall in line with everyone has to get tested, because if people get tested and they decide not to come home, then they don't spread the virus. And if they don't spread the virus, then there's no continued incentive for everyone to get vaccinated and all of these big companies to continue making money at the breakneck pace that they've made money over the last however many years, because the United States government just dumped all of their money. Like, Donald Trump opened up the safe in the Oval Office and just said, "Hey, all you guys, come on in here. Come on
Operation,
in here."
Operation Warp Speed, we forget how it worked. He gave to six. So they took six companies. Okay. Mm-hmm. Talk about oligopoly. Okay. Took six companies and said, "Okay, you guys each get $100 million whether you succeed or not." Okay. Mm-hmm. So make a vaccine. You two do it this way. You two do it this way. You two do it this way. And three succeeded. Three or four succeeded. And that's how we got to where we are, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's a lot. But, like, I mean, imagine if, like, the government could just write a check for $100 million. Very obviously we could. It wasn't in the budget for this fiscal year. Imagine if we just wrote, and everyone who needed it got insulin. You know what I mean? Like, imagine if we took care of our people.
That is the most bonkers thing that I feel like not enough people are discussing is just the fact that our government can decide when something is important enough to really fix. Like, we really did be out here not having a vaccine, and then we really did be having a vaccine.
We did actually warp speed that vaccine
in like 9 months.
Huge, yeah.
It was crazy, right? And then we see things like the infrastructure of our cities falling apart, crazy amounts of homelessness, crazy amounts of drug addictedness, people going broke because they can't afford their surgeries or whatever. And so you just have to ask the question, like, who decides, right? And
the policy experts,
right, exactly.
And the financial experts,
the policy experts who are in the pockets of the lobbyists, right? Why did the Afghanistan war go on for as long as it did? Why is Big Pharma in control of everything? Why is corn subsidized? Like, all of these questions that are really, really ruining American life, it all comes back to that. And we just are like, oh, it's the fault of these poor Republicans, you know, and they're such idiots because they're not doing this. And we're not looking in the places where the problems are coming from.
And that comes back to, like, my point. Is, like, I think the solution to this is profoundly personal. I think we all need to get incredibly virtuous because...
We all need to burn down the houses of the rich.
No. This is not my point. I think we all need to become incredibly, incredibly virtuous because, like, lobbyists are not just some dude in the lobby of a hotel waiting for a congressman to walk in like they used to be, which is why they're called lobbyists.
Yes.
Was it the lobby of Congress? I might be one. My cousin listens to the podcast.
They were in a lobby somewhere.
Yeah, they were in a lobby somewhere. That's called lobbyists. But, like, there are people who are, like, just people, just dudes and dudettes just working for these companies and these corporations. Mm-hmm. That can make a difference, you know, like whistleblowers at Facebook. You know how many people read those internal documents before someone came forward and said, hey, Facebook's doing something bad, guys, you know, and then how many whistleblowers there will be in the future. There's going to be so many. But it's like that kind of brazen disregard for your own personal gain in the interest of the public good is the kind of virtue that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And, like, people who are virtuous and wise don't necessarily have to be in charge to make a difference. It's tempting to say the solution is we need to elect virtuous senators. Fine. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just really not.
Name the most virtuous person you know. He or she is probably not anywhere close to being elected as a public official.
You know why? Because wise people want to be around wise people, and so they wouldn't become politicians. That's my point. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. One of my good friends ran for city council. That. But it's like... Here's the real thing, though. I was listening to a podcast about it was my QAnon podcast, okay?
Mm-hmm,
and there's a phenomenon in the QAnon movement about taking over local offices.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, Trump lost, the storm didn't happen. The only way we can make a difference now is by joining the local school board and by joining the local party council, right? And it's working and it's happening. And, like,
nice.
Good for them in a way.
Local action.
Good for them in a way. I heard my home county as a list, as one of these counties that's seeing an influx of...
You're telling me that Brevard County is having an influx of QAnon supporters?
Way to just dox me. What are you doing?
We've said it on the podcast before.
Oh, yeah,
everyone knows where you're from.
My home county. And they said Brevard County. And so I was like, that sounds a lot like, oh, no.
Oh, dear.
And funny, actually, the only other time I heard my home county in a book was it was an episode of Pints of Aquinas. He was talking about 50 Shades of Grey, and he was talking about a library network that banned 50 Shades of Grey from the library, and it was Brevard County Libraries. So that's cool.
Nice. Brevard County's always in the news.
Yeah, always in the news, man. But anyway, my point with that is, like, they recognize the power of, and they're not making decisions out of virtue either. They're making decisions based on this faction of the right wing has moralisms as well, like do your own research and trust the plan, and these things are all like moralisms of Q.
Mm-hmm.
But like
stop the steal.
Yeah. It's crazy. Lock her
the
up.
The other day we were playing fishbowl, And I was at the, I spoke at a retreat for college students. So they were playing fishbowl before my talk and I was there and we were having a good time. And there was a dispute about how many points a certain team had gotten. And some people were claiming that they had beat our team. And I shouted, "Stop the steal." And and no one else laughed except for the priest.
That's really funny.
It was great.
That's interesting. It was interesting for me to hear that because it's like, that's what I've heard Catholics talking about forever. And like you said, when we were talking about your little community thing, it's like, no one's actually going to do it.
No one's
going to tell you to go get these low level power. Cause everyone thinks you have to make changes from the top down or bottom up. It's actually not either. It's everyone working in conjunction. So like we all have to, wherever our status is in life, like you have to raise virtuous kids and you have to teach a virtuous classroom and you have to like make virtuous teenagers at your youth ministry and, sell virtuous real estate. I don't know.
Be virtuous while you sell real estate.
Yeah. It's, you have to do these things because otherwise our country's going to fall apart and I don't really care. I'll probably be dead, but like my kid might still be alive. So like,
yeah,
but that is me operating out of self-interestedness in my own kids. I don't know. Maybe self-interestedness for your kids is a good thing.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's self-interest. If you're doing something for your kids is inherently not self-interest. You're trying to create a better world for the next generation.
Create a better world for your little children.
I just want everyone to calm down, and I want everyone to realize that watching the news and reading the news every single day is a poison to your mind.
Really bad thing. Oh my gosh, it sucked when I was watching the news every day. Phoebe's dad is in the habit of watching the news, and especially during COVID when we were quarantined. Mm-hmm. And so he would have the news on, and I was like, oh, it's just stressing me out. You want to get into Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner?
Yes.
We've been podcasting for so long.
I know it hurts. I'm sorry. All right. You came to the right place, you ding-dong. It's called communication, baby.
Welcome to Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner, sponsored by Catholic Match.
Yes.
This is where a script comes in handy.
That is true.
Welcome to Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner, sponsored by Catholic Match. If you are a single boy or girl and you don't want that to be the case anymore, you can go to catholicmatch.com/crunch, start your free profile.
Free trial.
Free,
boom.
There's no free trial. It's a free profile regardless. But if
it's a free trial that lasts forever.
If you use that URL, you let them know that we sent you and you can support the podcast indirectly. I forget to say this all the time. Like, there's so many different ways to support the podcast that's not Patreon.
Yes.
And we don't ever say like, hey, leave us a review on iTunes, which you totally
should
do.
That's true. We always forget to say leave us a review on iTunes.
I think at the beginning of our podcast, I meant to mention this at the end. The beginning of our podcast, we pushed reviews a lot. And I think that's why we grew so fast.
Yeah.
Because we had like a ton of reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we push that anymore. But anyway, leaving a review on iTunes helps with the podcast. Sharing it with friends helps the podcast. That's like most people. They either found it on iTunes at the bottom of like another podcast they listen to. Or they got told by a friend. Anyway, sorry. Follow at CatholicMatch.com. Follow at CatholicMatch on Instagram. Here's a very long Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner.
Oh, boy. It's scripted.
It is. Relatively time sensitive. Oh, no.
Oh, gosh.
Friend is back together with an emotionally manipulative dude. How do we set boundaries and bring this to her attention? ? Okay. Prisha, she is 20 and a junior in college. Rosh, these are really difficult names to pronounce. Rosh, a dude, is 23, graduated from college in 2021. We are friends, but maybe not Rosh, but we do know him well. They're both Catholic, live in the same state, and went to the same college until Rosh graduated. We had both known Prisha and Rosh since in the fall of 2019. Pick easier names. These
Prussia,
are both aliases.
Prisha and Ross.
Prisha and Russia are dating. Since the fall of 2019, but they did not know each other until a year later in October 2020.
Mm-hmm.
We all became friends through our Catholic center and started to spend a lot of time together. Rosh later admitted he joined the friend group to spend time with Prisha. In February, Rosh and Prisha started to date. This is where everything starts to go downhill. While they were dating, they moved very quickly. She's not into kissing before marriage. so there wasn't a lot of physical touching besides hugging and holding hands. About a month later, she broke up with him because he needed to work on his relationship with Jesus. They both immediately after breaking up had hopes they would get back together and talked multiple times after the breakup in the following week about the breakup. Needless to say, it was weird and messy. A lot went down post-breakup. Since they were both a part of our friend group before they started dating, somehow the entire five other people in the friend group got involved in the breakup, adding to the messiness and making us choose sides. Great. Whoa. Anyways, in the weeks following the breakup, he continued to hang out with us, even though it made us uncomfortable because he started to emotionally manipulate us to pity him and feel bad for him.
Nice.
And feel bad for us already being better friends with Prisha, the girl, before he even got there.
Uh-huh.
He also started vaping. Boom. And the night after the breakup, he definitely downloaded Tinder and went and slept with somebody.
Oh,
wow.
I don't know if we need to say that.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, do we even know if that's true? Like, let's not slander a person.
Well, yeah, this is, geez. Okay. I don't know. That definitely is doing a lot of work. All right. He then, about a week after the breakup, told her about the Tinder date and vaping. Okay. So it's confirmed. She was really hurt by what he did, especially sleeping with another person, but was still wanted to get back together with him.
Oh.
Fast forward about a month, she decided to check in with him.
No, why?
He moved 5 hours away to another state after graduation. Uh-huh. They both started to talk over FaceTime weekly throughout the summer, and one day they decided they would virtually get coffee.
What?
Instead of them both drinking coffee at their houses, they each decided to go to a coffee shop in their respective cities. Weird.
This is so strange.
On that day, he flew to where she lived and surprised her at the coffee shop. Oh, apparently, he was visiting his family an hour away, but we were skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
She was very surprised and thought it was sweet. The rest of the friend group think it's a bit weird. But afterwards, he told her that he wanted to start virtually dating. And she said she wasn't ready, but decided she would go on a virtual date with him every other week.
No!
They've been dating and talking ever since in order to figure out if they should start really dating. Basically, everyone thinks and knows they're dating except her. He has now moved back to the same state as her and visited her at college. She doesn't believe that she's dating him, despite they talk every week for the past month and a half. She has not acknowledged the hurt that he caused her and her friends and her sister and her cousin and herself. As a note, we have tried to give them space after the breakup without success. We also shared our concerns with her about him and the literal emotional trauma he caused us. Our question is, are there any red flags?
You're joking.
This man is the nation of China, and you're asking me if there's any red flags? If there are, okay, if there are, how do we have a conversation with her when we've already tried many times? We want her not to be emotionally manipulated, but we feel like she's blinding herself to his issues. How do we set boundaries with her since we are not comfortable around him? Thanks for the comedic relief and the quality response, so maybe she will listen to us. Also, love the show. Thanks.
Gosh, I mean, she probably won't enjoy listening to this because we've told her that she's done the wrong thing every step along the way.
Oh my gosh. I want to say this one thing real quick.
Please.
People who are actively striving after virtue. Maybe I don't want to say that.
Try it. Try again. Take another pass.
People who are virtuous. Don't just decide. People who are chaste and good people, don't just decide to download Twitter, download Tinder, and have it on a one-night stand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he...
Not to mention the vaping. That's the more egregious
the
of the two.
Part. That's the worst
least,
part. Doesn't he
at
watch
least
those
I can
TikTok
see there's
ads?
Some there's some kind of natural good. Like, Tinder is this the seeking after the distortion of the natural beauty of the marital act. There's nothing good about vaping. Like, you're pursuing an empty cloud of shame.
An empty cloud of shame. It's just the fact that it takes so much. I don't know this guy. I don't know this guy. I don't want to make judgments based on just his external actions, but like,
I do.
The fact that he broke up with someone and then was able to go do that shows me that like that was already like an option in his mind before. You know what I mean?
Yes. Wasn't it the day of, the week of, like?
Yeah, like
you break up if you break up with someone. And you really love them and care for them and desire them to be holy. And you're breaking up with them because you need to work on your relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. The first thing that you do is not begin to vape and download Tinder. Like, that is so bonkers. Like,
yeah.
And then, in addition to the emotional manipulation of the friends, and obviously we don't know how true this is, right? This is one person's word.
And I'm not saying that everyone who uses Tinder is like, you know, a serial adulterer. Oh God. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
No. Ethan, you can use Tinder to find friends too. It's also a friend finding app.
It's a friend finding
app.
Just
like Craigslist.
Let's just ask questions. What is Tinder used for? Like before it was an app. What was Tinder?
To start a fire.
Yes. So, what place does Jesus talk about that has fire in it?
Gehenna, where the fire is not quenched and the worm does not die.
you are correct. It ain't the forests of you know, the beautiful places. You know?
Yeah. I think his actions show that he is not in a place to be with a person who clearly doesn't want to kiss before marriage. You know what I mean?
Let's think about times that it's okay to surprise someone by traveling 5 hours. when you're seriously dating and about to be engaged, you're allowed to surprise. You're in the military and you're coming back from a deployment, you are allowed to travel long distances.
Yeah.
Yes, more than 5 hours. You're allowed to come back and surprise. When you have maybe like you went a long ways and you got a gift and you're coming back and you're bringing a gift. Times when you maybe are not allowed to travel long distances and surprise someone, when you broke up with someone, slept with someone on Tinder, started vaping, and set up a virtual coffee date.
This guy thinks he's Ross from Friends.
He does think he's Rosh from Friends.
He's Rosh.
Rosh from Friends.
Oh my gosh. They were on a break. It's okay.
Like, it's this dude thinks that he's being all romantic, but he's doing this is so bizarre that you would. I just can't even imagine. Me and Emma started dating long distance. She lived in Michigan. She had moved to Nebraska. She was in Michigan. We talked while she was in Michigan, and then she moved to Nebraska for a little bit. We started dating when she lived in Nebraska, but we knew that she was moving to Oklahoma, right? Like, it was a whole package deal. And I was willing, when she was still living in Michigan, I was willing to fly there, you know, and like see her. But that was after we had known each other for a year and been talking like every single day for about 2 months. And neither of us had, dated another person, or like it was a natural progression. And so it was like, all right, now's the time. We dated, we broke up, and I moved to another city, and then we talked for a little bit, and then I flew in to surprise you. Like,
we dated. It sucked the whole time. We broke up. I literally,
because you tried to get me to betray my conscience, like the federal government, and.
Wait, did they? I don't think they didn't break up because he tried to get her to sleep with him.
It wasn't stated, but I have to assume that it's true.
Do you think that's true?
I don't want to assume,
but
listen,
this guy Rosh, he's
really given me a rash. Let me just say that.
He's given me you would do that if you loved me vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the vibes I'm picking up.
Oh my.
That's what happened. That's the
started vaping.
Those vibes are the where's my hug vibe, but like 6 years later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are there any red flags? Yes, there are red
flags. Yes, there
flags.
Are red flags. What so do you many. Do? I don't know, man. I think you gotta keep being friends with this girl and explicitly do not be friends with this guy.
I think you be friends with this girl and tell her, hey, here's all the ways that this guy is not a person that you should date.
I don't actually know if that's going to help, Ethan.
What's the alternative? That
they're getting in the way of their love. You don't understand.
No.
You understand. You understand.
No.
Whoa. Caught in a bad romance, okay? That's where they are. They're caught in a bad romance. They hate that they love each other. They need each other. That's how they feel.
Let me tell you this.
What?
Thank you for letting me interrupt that.
Yeah.
They've been keeping their distance. That's what she said at the end, or the friend said at the end. We've been keeping our distance and we're letting them do what they, but apparently it's bad enough that they need to write into a podcast to figure out what to ask if there are any red flags. So that must mean that it's bad enough to warrant some kind of intervention, because they've already done the, you know, let them do their thing. We're not going to intervene. But it's, if I was in this position and I was wanting to date a girl who had started vaping, I would want someone to stop me. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it might be weird and uncomfortable, but you got to at least let her know, like, hey, we're all, like, all of us, like, get everybody, like, we're all not on board with this, and we all love you.
Yeah.
This is a bad idea. This is bad.
An intervention might help, but also, like, man, it'd be a lot easier if social media didn't exist. I was, like, literally just, like, borrow her phone for something and just block his number, and she'll be like, why isn't he texting me?
I don't know if that would work.
If we're talking about wisdom here, that might not be wise.
It's not very wise at all.
I have no idea. Yeah. I think, I mean, if they live, wait, hold on. I may have missed something at the end. Are they
moved back to the same city.
Oh, shoot. Dang it.
I know. He lives there now.
Dang it.
They waited too long.
They waited too long to block his number. Dang it. They wanted to virtually date.
I don't think that's the solution.
Ross has moved. I think it is. Ross has now moved back to the same state as her. And visits her at college. So you and me are from big, big states, where big states, yeah, even if you're in the same state, can be far, far away.
You could be a big state too. Oi.
As a note, we have tried to give them space. Don't give them space. Give him space. Like, don't ask her to hang out with. I honestly, because, like,
every time she mentions him, say who?
It's very clear that she doesn't recognize that she does not deserve to be treated this way. Like, yeah. And that's a problem. That's a problem. And what you need now more than ever is not to leave her alone, like, in terms of a support system. Like, she needs a support system where, you know, just, like, nonchalant, like, that's actually not, like, the way you deserve to be treated. You know, like, mm-hmm. you shouldn't have said that. I'm sure there's other things besides the big red flags that you've mentioned. And so, like, you need to be there for her. I would invite her to hang out. And explicitly say girls' night, because then she'll at least have an excuse for her mm-hmm. boyfriend to not come and hang out with the quote-unquote friend group. Mm-hmm. Because friend groups can be codependent in this weird way where the girls never hang out without the guys and the guys never hang out without the girls. And it's like, that's not good, because you need sisterhood among one another. You can't just have this weird, like, sibling-ish relationship where you guys are all, like, together. Yeah, you need brotherhood and sisterhood amongst each other. I'm back on my brotherhood BS. I have to do a video for Catholic Match about it. I signed a contract like months ago and I stopped caring about it, but I got to do it anyway. I'm filming my Rule of Brotherhood course for Catholic Match Plus.
Nice. Catholic Match Plus?
Yeah, there's a Catholic Match Plus.
It's a streaming service.
It's a streaming service, yeah, where you get a boyfriend.
A digital boyfriend.
Oh yeah, I can. I guess we should promo that because they sponsor us. Yeah, Catholic Match Plus. They're gonna have, like, courses on how to date. It's actually gonna be a lot better than their blog. It's gonna be like, yeah, their blog, instead of the Catholic Match Institute that they had, they're doing Catholic Match Plus, where you just get, like, the blog essentially funnels into the courses. And so nice. I'm gonna have a course on Catholic Match Plus on how to grow in brotherhood. It's gonna
sweet.
Be great.
Patreon.com/TheCrunch, Facebook.com/groups/TheCrunchCast. Leave us a review on iTunes. Share with a friend. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
I didn't script this part.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We'll be praying for you, and we'll see you all next week.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.